بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Usually with we're sitting at the dinner table and there was a knock on the door. So the wife went, and as she returned, she was sobbing very heavily, crying, tearing. The husband was obviously anxious to know what was the need, what was the reason for crying. Did the man shout you, hit you? Did he insult you? So no, nothing. What's the reason for your crying? And she says, this person that was begging, he happened to be my former husband. And what has happened is a very prosperous, very wealthy person, and things just turned around. And the point that things turned around for him was that I was sitting having meals with him and there was a knock on the door. We're newly married, enjoying ourselves. I'm putting a luqma in his mouth, he's doing the same for me, enjoying ourselves. And there's a knock on the door. So he went to see what's going on. And he shouted the beggar, reprimanded him, pushed him away, chased him out. And ever since he did this, when things turned around for him, his business all began to fail, collapse, to sell his properties, everything away, one after the other. Until eventually he told me that he won't be able to maintain. And it's not going to be the right thing for you to be in my marriage, and I can't take care of you, I can't support you. So at that point he divorced me. And today I saw him after all this long period, I seen him in a pitiable condition, torn clothes, broken shoes, disheveled hair, in extremely pitiable condition I saw him. I thought about the good days we had, we enjoyed, and what we're seeing now today. So this brought the tears in my eyes. So the husband says, and do you know who I am? I am the beggar that came knocking to your door. Aadmi apne aap ko bequsoor na samjhe. Man mustn't consider himself to be sinless. You know, the small sin, the wrong, the problem that you have done, sooner or later. And Allah Pak is watching everything. The whole grand scene, the whole scene is before Allah Ta'ala. Nothing is hidden from him. There's no secret in his eyes. Maybe a secret and a mystery to us, but nothing is a secret, nothing is a mystery before him. Sometimes we don't consider the wrong to be a wrong. A pious person is sitting for zikr, and the zikr is not just coming out of his mouth. He's trying, but he's having a lot of difficulty in doing the zikr. So he can't get along. He cried to Allah Ta'ala, something went wrong somewhere. So he was told, see, so many days ago, you uttered this inappropriate word. And for the inappropriate word that you used, now you are going through difficulty. How many words of that nature we just blurt out, we don't think much about it. While I was in Bangladesh, so we were listening to, we started sitting in the masjid, and there's a ringtone going on. Someone's ringtone is a musical one, someone is something strange. And the worst one that I heard was one person came to the immigrations, and the immigration officer heard some gunshots. The meanwhile, it was the ringtone. He got a shock of his life, but it's a ringtone. And one not so bad, but also bad, was one mullah is giving a talk. And after the talk is over, then he went to give the Jummah khutbah. In the meanwhile, his phone, the ringtone, it was like a cat that was crying, you know, miserably. But the whole town is listening to this over the transmitter. But this is a serious thing. Before you come into the masjid, understand whose presence you're coming into. Ulaika ma kana lahum an yadkhuluha illa khaifin. You come in the presence of Allah Ta'ala with a state of fear. You want to be blessed. You want to take something. Allah Ta'ala is your host. You are his guest. And when you are his guest, you want to take something on the return. So behave properly, correctly. And Allah Ta'ala will fill your bags up. So we come and misbehave. Someone is dressing in jammies. Someone is dressed up on a t-shirt with a t-shirt. Someone doesn't have a topi. In the old days, in nearly every masjid should be a style. But there were jubbas all hanged up, and there should be a whole pile of topis. So man that was not very well dressed and attired, he said, at least some respect to Allah Ta'ala. Some form of respect. I'm coming to the divine presence. I can't come in my casual, in my pajamas. You ever hear anybody coming in his jammies and getting nikah, getting married? You have some respect for that occasion. Some respect. May you azim sha'air Allah. The things that are related to deen, anything small or big, but that level of respect. Before it was more, now slowly this is fading away. Muhammad repeatedly says this. He says, Yasab kharabi, this problem and this whole decline that we find is deen or ahle deen ki azmat logo ke kulub se nikal gaya. Deen and the respect for the people of deen that is on the decline. So you're going to find everything falling down. So the whole, you'll have a direction in life, you'll progress as long as you respect everything that is pertaining to deen or the people of deen. Show it in some way or the other. It's deen and I need to show it the respect. At the level that I can show, I must show it. So this, we're talking about these ringtones. Now, it's reached a level where it's a musical ringtone, but you don't even consider it as wrong. Just now I was hearing to one, listening to one ringtone. It's a musical tone. Now, the wrong is not being considered as wrong. But that compounds the wrong, complicates the wrong, makes it even worse for you. One is you know it's wrong, and one is you're committing a wrong, but you don't even consider the wrong to be wrong. That makes it even more serious. So one is coming to the masjid with some degree of respect. Check your phones and all that. The better thing is not to bring the phones in the masjid. Any person whose phones goes on, he says, no, I just slipped up, I just made a mistake. But you know you're going to make a mistake. In future, keep the phone at home. Everybody is not a doctor that is on call. A doctor sometimes is on call, hospital. That's a different thing. So you're not so important. Not so important, then you don't have to carry it right to the masjid. Leave it in the car, leave it at home, and then come. Because you have proven that you don't have the sense of responsibility to switch it off as you enter the masjid. Yes, if you are entering a courtroom, you'll be very particular to switch it off. Because you've got respect for the person that is there. You hold him in high respect. But who's in the masjid? Here you're talking to Allah Ta'ala. You talk to Allah Ta'ala, He is the doer, He is the maker. Then we show the scant regard and then we want our things to be worked out. How does it work? So either keep it at home, switch it off, and I say for most people, when they don't have that sense of responsibility, just keep it at home. But the same token, the ringtone has to be changed. It's so loud, sometimes someone got an azan tone. So one is the masjid azan going, then your azan is going, then 3-4 azan, the whole masjid is not the right thing. Azan is going to be called out at the masjid you are in, or in the neighborhood. Now you got it on your phone as well. And then you're not particular about switching it off. Now then it's a disturbance. Disturbance is being caused. Just now, just a few days ago, one person's phone just went on. And I was about to break the rosa. Someone told me, hey, it's not the masjid azan. This is someone's telephone. The phone can be wrong. It could be a mistake on the phone. Maybe it's typed. Maybe that person's from somewhere else. And he worked it out accordingly. Now the thing switched on here. So these type of things here, see the respect we need to show. The care, respect, azmat, muhabbat, anything to do with deen. But really it takes you very far, very, very far. A little bit of respect that you show. We hear of Mahmud Ghaznavi, rahmatullah alayhi, who was the king of India. Before we get to that story, Ali Mia Sahib, rahmatullah alayhi, his books have got a lot of anecdotes, a lot of lessons. Sometimes he gives it in a story form, but you just have to look through it and you find some wonderful stories, lessons, anecdotes. So he's got a story there that the Khadim noticed, the attendant of the Buzurg, he noticed that there was some little commotion. You know how you get khidmat satis, and there was some noise going on there. So when the Khadim noticed this, so he looked towards the Shaykh, but this is not normal for the Khanqah. The Khanqah is a lot of peace and there's a lot of tranquility that prevails. There's no noise, no fight. You don't find these things happening. And now truly, against the routine, we are hearing some commotion going on that side. What's happening? So the Shaykh pointed towards his knees. The Khadim didn't catch on yet. What's the knees got to do with the noise? The noise this side here, and the Shaykh is pointing out towards the knees. What's the knees got to do with the noise there? So then the Shaykh explained, you see, I've got a gout problem. And because of my gout problem, then I couldn't finish my daily routine, my zikr, tasbihat, Quran Sharif, etc. I couldn't complete that. And when I didn't complete that, now all this commotion and noise that you're hearing is because of this. So you see, you find a problem in the home, right? In the business, find some commotion, some problem. Many a time it is because of this. You didn't do what you're supposed to be doing. You worked out a program for yourself, a routine for yourself, then you need to be diligent, be at it. I need to do this. I can't leave the home without doing it. Like someone that is working, or he's got his own practice, and he makes sure that he is there on time. He's doing it diligently, he knows it's my obligation, my duty, and I'll be marked. If I don't do it, I don't come on time, they'll mark me. So he's doing it, and he's doing it diligently. He's coming there before time. Because he knows what's going to be the consequence. But when things relate to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so he takes it very lightly, casually, ho jaya to ho jaya, ho gaya to ho gaya, nahi hua to kaun si bari baat hui. So it happened, so it happened, didn't happen, sort of big thing, or a train smash, so why cry over it, why fuss over it? So things that are related to Allah Ta'ala, that we need to be very serious, absolutely serious. Something that I've done for Allah Ta'ala, and I need to be diligent about it. My door, it's a fashion now, that every mother, every father wants his child to be a hafiz. Very good. But being a hafiz is one, just about one-tenth of the responsibility. Then the nine-tenth afterwards, there are two major things. It comes to the nine-tenth. One is the child applying the Quran Sharif? And number two, is he reciting the Quran Sharif? One-tenth is just learning the word. And nine-tenths is about the child applying the Quran Sharif, number one. And number two, apart from him applying the Quran Sharif, what about the child reciting the Quran Sharif? Now from now you're getting complaints coming in. Today, yesterday also there's complaints coming in. See now, it's a family tradition that we have an Eid get together, right? Very good, mashallah, just to bring the families together, it's a good thing. So, but no, Murad, it doesn't end there. When there's a family get together, then at some level there is mixing of the male and the female. Now how do we handle this? At some point all the males are coming in, women are coming in, and there's a lot of action carrying on, right? We can see it from the front of us now. What do we do? On the one end we've got a command of Allah Ta'ala that we don't mix up. And we've got another command of Allah Ta'ala that we join relatives. Now this is a clash here. If we're going to join, then we're going to mix up. We're going to mix up, someone will mix up more, someone will mix up less. But it's going to be happening. And it's in front of your eyes that it's happening. Then how do you reconcile? So the easy answer I give is by, if you go through an invite and you saw wine being served, would you remain there? Or you saw, for example, naked woman dancing around at that function, will you remain there? Woman naked and dancing, will you remain? He said, no, it's an ikhtilaf, or his own opinion that I didn't come for that, I came for this. But you saw a naked woman actually dancing there, will you remain there? Obviously, you're not going to remain there. So when you're not going to remain there, you can't ask this question that what must I do in this situation? Yes, you may notify your brother or your cousin or whoever is having this type of a function that I've got no problem with you, no fight with you. This is the law of the Sharia. I need to respect it. Like I respect you, then both of us, and all of us need to respect the Sharia. And because we need to respect the Sharia, for some reason maybe you couldn't do it this year, so excuse me. When you do it next year, inshallah, we'll come, we'll attend. Our youngster came and he's complaining this morning. What must I do? If I don't go, my uncle's going to shout me. So I said, no, you explain it to him. He said, no, I explained to them on one occasion that, you see, so many people died in the family. Isn't this a lesson for us that we should be more conscious? So he said, no, I did mention this to them. So they say, no, we're not in mourning now. We're not Hindus that we keep mourning on an Eid, etc. So I said, bhai, don't mix up the issues. A mourning is a different thing, and a Shari obligation is a different thing. So you're mixing the issues just to justify your get together. You want to get together, and then you say that you're not in mourning. And Hindus, they remain in mourning, at a function or at a happy occasion, and they mourn. So you're mixing the issues to justify your wrong ends. This is also a problem in this day, that you want to do something, so you want to justify yourself. Somehow or the other, you want to justify yourself. That complicates the wrong. Sin becomes even more serious in the sight of Allah Ta'ala. If it's wrong, say you are wrong. Don't justify. If you saying that you are in mourning, then the other person can also say you are in celebration. Yes? There's a time to show happiness and there's a way to show happiness. If the man uses the same argument that you're not in mourning and he's got a dancing woman around, when you go there, say, no, you're not in mourning. So you can celebrate. Celebrate, yes, you can show happiness, but within limits. Within the limits you show happiness, no problem. But now you go beyond the limits and then you are taking exception at why that person is not coming. One person told me, few days ago, said, no, I went there and I didn't shake hands with my cousin, I didn't shake hands, so they stopped talking to me. These things have to be pointed out, that this is not right. Right? And it's not going to be the right thing to show it at the occasion. I don't say not the right, not the, not correct, it is correct. But normally when you tell people on the occasion, they can't understand. So what you have to do is, long before the occasion, tell them, this is not the right thing. You're not coming not because of any personal grievance, but it's not the right thing that I shake hands with girls, even though they are my cousins, even though we grew up together. But that is not a reason for us to be meeting freely like this. You are a stranger, in Shari terms, you are a stranger. Being a stranger, I can't shake hands. So excuse me for this. Tell the person, inshallah, he will accept it. But you're not telling the person, not educating. Now he is thinking, why are you keeping away? Why are you keeping aloof? He doesn't understand the actual reason for this behavior of yours. and you're not explaining. So in advance you need to tell them, this is the reason, I've got no problem with you, I've got respect, I've got mohabbat for you, but it's a shari requirement that I don't meet up with girls like this. Sometimes you have it, you have a problem even in meeting close relatives, even if it's an aunt, then you have a problem meeting. One person came and he says that maybe a year or 2 years ago. So he says that he just returned from Hajj, so his mother-in-law came to meet him at the airport, and now the mother-in-law is wearing tights. Now when she's wearing the tights, now she's insisting, the mother-in-law is insisting that I need to embrace my son-in-law. Now I'm newly married, so I felt a little bit difficult to refuse. The youngster is telling me I was newly married, so I felt difficult to refuse my mother-in-law embracing me. Now as she's embracing me, I could actually, because her clothing was tight, so the nipple I could feel on my body. And now every inch of strength and energy I had, I knew that this will now create big, major problems. Just now my nikah with my wife will be haram. I can't live with her. It will be hurmat and mustaharat. I could understand all these things here. So every inch of energy I had, I had to just break every feeling. But now, you see, we create problems. We just see a style, a fashion, and then blindly want to follow. Oh, this clothing here, that type of style, this Jackie is doing this, and John is doing this, and Jill is doing this, why can't we do it? So we're looking at any style, and we're looking at any type of fashion. And then the consequences that follow, nobody's concerned about the consequences. Now, imagine if that youngster had to embrace his mother-in-law with that, in that style, right? And some feelings had passed. Even small little feelings had just passed. Now, he would have, his marriage with his wife would have been terminated. If his marriage with his wife would have been terminated, then he's living in zina with his wife, living in haram. Just for that moment, they could have destroyed everything, could have destroyed. So this laws of the Sharia must be respected. The small laws, the big laws. Then you want to know why there's fights, why there's problems, why there's difficulties in the house, why can't we get along, why there's no muhabbat. So these laws are not being respected, then how will you, how your house can be in respect? If you're not respecting the system of Allah Ta'ala, then the system of your house, how can it go well? It can't go well. Remember, you can try what you want, but it won't work out. There'll be some problems, some hitches, some hiccups, you'll have something or the other. One person, Brother Sufyan Sawri Rahmatullahi, you know, many times youngsters, they come into this environment and they long to be punctual in tahajjud. Come and ask them, what can I do more often? I want to also recite tahajjud. Now in the environment, so someone will get us up, or there is an environment, so we do it. Before, I remember, when you go out in Jamaat, then tahajjud was like part of the plan. So there's someone nicely, the Jamaat child, they come and rub your feet nicely, slowly, nicely, with respect, and they get you for tahajjud. So this is such a nice environment. And the, one of the system was, I remember, in the early 70s and around the late 60s, that whilst you're in the ijtima, you only talk about the 6 points. Don't talk about anything else. Absolute nothing. Just talk. So it may have been a little bit of a stringent thing, but it kept a direction. People had a direction. Now, you don't keep these things here, then you become like a fear. Jamaat is going on, are you worried about what is selling here, what is selling that side, and the burger here, how's it, how's the burger this side here, and how's the mince roll that side, and how's the chicken tikka on that end. So that becomes the topic of discussion. Then after that, you're sitting in the bayan, 3 quarters of the time you are on the phone. So you're not interested in the bayan. And now people have got stories to give also. So someone is on the phone, the bayan is carrying on. So someone asked him, but what are you doing? He said, no, I'm just recording all the message. I'm just typing all the, just writing it in. the bayan I'm writing in. Now, you don't have a forum to correct the person also, because he is typing the imam's message in his memory, he's typing it out. But what a distraction. A distraction. And then we want to know why this confusion, why this problem is. So remember, وَلِلَّهِ جُنُودُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. We forget at times that the forces of the heavens and the earth, all are Allah Ta'ala's. Allah Ta'ala can get one small bacteria and destroy you. Don't you hear about the story? Some infection, some bacteria, and he couldn't succumb after that. I think he had the better of him. It's one small little bacteria, not even visible to the eye. That is the force of Allah Ta'ala. That's the army of Allah Ta'ala. Who can fight that? You may use one antibiotic or something, it may suppress, comes up again. Suppress, may come up again. So that forces, that armies of Allah Ta'ala, who can fight those armies? Pluto, what do you call him? That philosopher, Pluto, he asked Musa alayhi salam, that, say for example, if the heaven was an archer, right, and the earth was the target, right? The earth is the target, and the heaven is the archer. Then you want to save yourself in this whole commotion, right? You want to save yourself. What is the most effective way to save yourself? The Musa's answer came spontaneously, get onto the side of the archer. So Pluto said, Platon said, this man is a Nabi. To give an answer so spontaneous, really, it is only the work of a Nabi. So this armies, these different forces and armies, etc., are all Allah Ta'ala's. وَلِلَّهِ جُنُونُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. And you're in a predicament, this problem, that difficulty, this thing not working out. What is the safest thing? Safest thing, just come on the side of Allah Ta'ala. In other words, become right with Allah Ta'ala. You can see there's a problem now. Now, correct the problem, rectify the problem, just come on Allah Ta'ala's side. You come on Allah Ta'ala's side, then everything is sorted out. And really, Allah Ta'ala is so compassionate, so loving. Imam Ghazali Sahib Rahmatullahi has got an incident of a Nabi. And his community being struck with a drought, severe drought. Plants are dying, animals are about perishing. So they all came out for istisqa. Istisqa is where you make dua for rain. You are asking Allah Ta'ala for rain. So they came out. You know, at some time, people would attribute things to Allah Ta'ala. Anything to Allah Ta'ala. When some years back, right, when Ramadan fell around the summer seasons, and suddenly the Ramadan came, and it's midsummer, but it's cooling off. It's cooling off, so you'll hear many Hindus saying, the sul is they call it. These Muslims, because it's the Ramadan, so therefore Allah Ta'ala made it cool. They will say it. So everybody was attributing things to Allah Ta'ala. Whichever way he was doing it, but he attributed things to Allah Ta'ala. Now, man became not too intelligent, became a little bit three intelligent. You see, too intelligent is alright. But when he's three intelligent, then he's dangerous. Now it's not science, the scientific fact, and this global warming, and this thing happened, and that happened. So where's Allah Ta'ala? You brought this global warning and science and the ecosystem and everything. You learned everything else. But in this whole equation, where is Allah Ta'ala? So the science, everything, whatever you learned, did it distance you from Allah Ta'ala or did it bring you closer to Allah Ta'ala? Think to yourselves, when you are composed, you're calm, and there's nothing disturbing you. Around that time, think now, right? I'm saying all these things here. But is it taking me further away from Allah Ta'ala or is it bringing me closer to Allah Ta'ala? This science, etc., for most people I think it's an azab, because it's not bringing them closer to Allah Ta'ala. They're looking into the cause and the effect, cause and effect, and then it reaches a point that they forget that there is the final cause.
say this is the cause, this is the cause. But then when it comes to Allah Ta'ala, then they want to block their minds off. Because at some point you have to say, alright, this was the original cause, right? But when you're coming to that point, then you have to block off your mind. Deliberately, because you don't want to believe in Allah Ta'ala. So that pride comes, that pride comes in. When that thing comes in, it blocks your intelligence. Like I was saying this morning, that the road of knowledge opens up when the pride is smashed down. But the moment you've got that pride in between, even an iota, that road of knowledge is blocked off. You can't move. You can't make that. You can't make that progress. Now you think you are progressing, but you are the same spot, just going in circles. Like, you know, in the old days, we had a miller, he would have an S. The S would be turning the lever, and that would be squeezing the oil out. So that as that is going around, that lever, that thing is thinking, hey, I covered so much of distance, you know, cover the earth. But you tell your S, you are at the same point, wherever you started, you are at the same point. So the scientist also is at the same point. He didn't make any progress. Really, he's at the same point that he started. And he feels, oh, I did this research, and I did this discovery, and this experiment, gone so far, out of the moon and Mars, right? But the ass doesn't realize that he's at the point that he started. And the reason why he's backwards is because he don't want to believe in Allah. Allah says it, Allah complains. نَحْنُ خَلَقْنَاكُمْ فَلُوْ لَا تُصَدِّقُونَ We made you, why don't you believe? Imagine what a line of complaint this is. It should put you down in tears. If you just understand Arabic and understand how Allah is saying, Allah has come to your level and He's complaining to you, نَحْنُ خَلَقْنَاكُمْ فَلُوْ لَا تُصَدِّقُونَ We made you, why don't you believe? Don't you see the whole plan? We have made you. So you brought science, you brought everything else, but you deleted Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that whole consciousness that of Allah ta'ala, He is the doer, He is the maker. That's why the Jama'at people, they dedicated their lives only to teach Iman and Yaqeen. And I feel very convinced that Mullah Ilyas's heart must have been inspired by this. Because that whole, we're teaching everything else, and that Iman and Yaqeen is all flawed. So I asked him, what is the worth of your action? A lot of actions, but your iman is all in the doldrums. Everything has been smashed down. Ask you, is there any worth of your action? So action is going to gain worth proportionate to your faith. You have yaqeen, Allah Ta'ala is there, He's watching, He's seeing. But you don't have that faith of Allah Ta'ala, and you do a lot of things. So what happens? So this yaqeen has to be rectified. If there is a thing in this day that has to be worked on, is your iman. Your faith, and anything that shakes your faith, that has to be, whether you like it or not, just thrown out. You can see this is shaking my faith, my child's faith, whatever. But this, I can't reconcile this. This must be thrown out. No matter how expensive it is, but for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. Well, what have you done for the sake of Allah Ta'ala? You're in love with that girl, and she says, no, I will marry you, but you must make this promise with me. That you won't have this and you will have this, right? You will cut off this and you will do this. You make every sacrifice. Why you want that? You want that girl, so you make every sacrifice just to get her. Now you want Allah Ta'ala, but at your terms and conditions. Not at the terms and conditions of Allah Ta'ala. I say, is that right? You want Allah Ta'ala, Allah Ta'ala is everything. And but you want to come to Him, but at your terms and conditions. Allah Ta'ala, I'll make the terms. But you must just accept me. Whatever terms I come with, and you must accept me. I ask you, is that fair? That girl, right, you didn't make her, right, and you're not going to maintain her entirely. Partly you may maintain her, right? But you're prepared to make every sacrifice for her. And the one that did everything for you, there isn't a thing that he didn't do for you. For him, no, nothing. Absolutely. My terms and conditions, when I like it, when it's manageable, then I will do things. I say, is it fair? Is it right? So just look at the word again. نَحْنُ خَلَّقْنَاكُمْ فَلَوْ لَا تُصَدِّقُونَ Why don't you believe? We made you. We brought you about. You was nothing. We made you. What you were? You were just a tiny fluid of impurity. and we brought you out. So in the past at least, people went into shirk and all that, but they still have that consciousness that says Allah Ta'ala. Right. Now, with progress, you progressed to this point, that you came to the brink of atheism, non-existence of Allah Ta'ala. One villager said it very well. He said, someone asked him, "By your brother, your son is going to study advanced studies overseas, going to yeah. So how far he's gone?" Says, "I can tell you that now he's gone to that point of he's gone to that level that now he can stand and urinate." But the villager he gives, they see it as it is. They don't mince the words. As it is, they will say it. One villager, his son graduated, right? Advanced studies, and he graduated, came back. So he, in his village style, the shawl and lungi, whatever he had, so that type of clothing he wore, his village style, to receive his son. So all the other professionals were there to receive him. So he was also there to receive his son. So the other professionals are asking, "But what is this old man doing here? What's he doing here? He said, "No, he's my neighbor." So the villager gave it straight. "Yeah, now I'm his mother's neighbor." So these people, you don't play around them. They'll say it as it is, straight. So with this type of education, our reason is one lopsided, all skewed. So we can't think right, we can't reason right. It's all flopped. We consider our ways, what we learned in Islam, right? And from our parents, we consider all that to be inferior, and the ways and the styles of the West as superior. So everything of ours is all inferior. We hear of Adam alayhi salam is all inferior. And we hear of Darwin that is superior. So we leave our styles to go and lick up the kufr and the filth of Darwin. Because we are inferior, therefore, why must we? And if someone is being a little bit considerate, say, can't we just reconcile the difference? What is the need to reconcile? If someone says, "All right, you know, your father was a chimpanzee, right? And your mother was a giraffe, right?" Say, "All right, hey, no, don't talk about this. It can't happen." And you say, "No, can't we just reconcile the thing?" Someone says your father was a chimpanzee, mother was a giraffe, right? And somehow they got together, a man came out, right? So now, say, "No, this can't happen." So, "But can't we reconcile this?" "But it's irreconcilable. You can't reconcile this thing here." So asking for a reconciliation is like asking a giraffe to a chimpanzee, "Now try and merge the both things together." Say, "Hey, it doesn't reconcile. This is stupid talk. Don't you be so derogative, right? How can you talk about my father as being his a chimpanzee? How can you say that?" Then you made the whole progeny of Adam alayhi salam, the children of apes, that was not derogatory. All Adam alayhi salam's children, this was derogatory. When it came to your father, they became derogatory. But the whole progeny of Adam alayhi salam, you wouldn't run them down, that this was not derogatory. So this I'm saying, we are going towards this thing here, not realizing that we are becoming a godless nation. How many a youth will come and tell you, around an examination period, "Mulana, you know what, my examinations are clashing with the namaz times. What do I do?" I ask them, "Bhai, is a thing for you to ask? The one that provided you everything, him you want to squeeze out. You are supposed to be asking that question. Bhai, my namaz, I must do it, whether it's exam or whether it's a death sentence." The fuqaha has mentioned it so clearly, whether it's a death sentence, whether it's an exam, and the masla they've got, that a woman is about delivering and it's coinciding with a namaz. She was in that state, she must perform a namaz. Imagine she's in that labor, final stage of labor, and it's coinciding with her namaz time. In whichever posture is possible, She must see to it that she must perform a namaz. Then to the namaz is not enough for her. Right? Oh, a small little examination. No, can I just postpone it? But the one that is providing, you forgot him. He gave you the intelligence. He gave you existence. He gave you the opportunity to study. He's giving you the opportunity to come up at this point. And when you came at this point, then you forgot him, then you dumped him. Then your profession, you got it, you didn't get it. I ask you, will you be prosperous? You can't imagine being prosperous. You forgot Allah and did this thing here. Khuda ko bhul kar ke kaam kiya. Then will you be prosperous? Who gave you everything, you forgot him. At the last 11th hour, you forgot him. You abandoned him. But you want Allah Ta'ala to bless you. Is it? Can you reconcile this thing? You can't reconcile. Allah Ta'ala, with Allah Ta'ala, you can't negotiate. Just do it. It is His plan, His command, His decision, that you don't negotiate any terms with Him. Just do it. Like how He said, just do it. The boss said, or whoever said, but it's Allah Ta'ala's command, I will do it. You're in a plane, do it. Now, you are coming in, met someone overseas, so it says, went on Qatar Airlines. Why the ticket is cheaper? Ask him, did you perform your namaz? No, they don't allow you. Did you know that they won't allow you? He said, no, I knew about it. But now this cheaper ticket now. Just for that $2,000 now you left your namaz. I say it's worth it. You're going to do a nafil thing, umrah or something, whatever you're going for. And in the process you knew that they will not allow you to perform your namaz. You saved that 2,000 or 5,000 you saved. But you missed out a faraz. I ask you, is it worth it? Now you've got this type of a relationship with Allah Ta'ala, that anything comes and I can leave Allah Ta'ala out. And then you want Allah Ta'ala to bless you. Is that relationship right? Think to yourself, do we have any shame? Any type of sense of shame do we have? And for a small 5,000, 10,000, 1,000 savior, then I can leave out Allah Ta'ala, I can leave out namaz. I can do it because it's alright. Allah Ta'ala is such, Abu Talha radiyallahu anhu, you hear the story, right? Repeatedly we hear in the teachings of Islam. So I say this Fazail Kitabs, it must be read diligently. Well, in my understanding, Shaykh was a genius of a man. But he wrote it in so simple style, he wrote it. So I don't appreciate the man. So I said, okay, what is Kitabs about? But he wrote at great depths he wrote. We're just talking about it. Ab kis ko kahe? Ye to bahut sab buzurg kis kis ko roye? That's called zulm. What? What was shay fi ghayri mahalli? That's called zulm. Wrong is to put a thing at the wrong time. Wrong place, wrong time. That's called zulm. So no, stopping azan. So someone stopping you from reading namaz at zawal time, what do you say? Stopping namaz. But the wrong thing, the thing at the wrong time, wrong place. That's zulm. Thing at the wrong time, wrong place. That's zulm. Nobody stopping namaz, but the wrong time, wrong place. So Abu Talha is reading namaz. In his orchard, he's reading namaz. Nabi Salman liked that orchard. To drink the water from the orchard, right? And once he's in namaz, his garden also is nice and dense, spread out, so beautiful, right? And the fluttering of some birds or something, or some branches, that thing caught his attention. When it caught his attention, now look at the respect. See, the whole thing revolves around respect, muhabbat, greatness. And that's how Allah Ta'ala blesses you. So he makes up his mind. Now this orchard, I'm not going to keep it any longer. Though that orchard was at a prime spot, right near the masjid. Today it's incorporated into the masjid. It will fetch about billions, right? About 10 acres, right in the precincts of the masjid. Right? So he says, now, this thing here has distracted me from my beloved, from Allah Ta'ala. So I can't keep this thing. This thing has distracted me from who? From Allah Ta'ala, the greatest. So I can't keep this thing, this, the path of Allah. I don't want to keep it anymore. Now, how many times we look at ourselves in retrospect? That's why I say we don't have that level of respect. And therefore, everything is deteriorating, everything is failing. How many times the phone distracts us from Allah Ta'ala, from the Nabi, from the laws of Allah Ta'ala. And we don't think much about it. Just, alright, now I made a mistake, astaghfirullah, next time inshallah Allah will give me tawfiq. That's the relationship we got with Allah Ta'ala. Then we want Allah Ta'ala to bless us. And then we want to compare ourselves with the Sahaba Ikram. You see the Sahaba Ikram as a different people, different Jamaat altogether. As though it's like they came from outer space. If we talk, compare ourselves to them, it's a different Jamaat altogether. It's just that little, he was, what wrong he was doing? He was in namaz. And that bird, you know, or the fluttering, whatever it was not of his own doing. Not his ikhtiyar, not his own doing. But he said, this thing here has disturbed me from the beloved, from Allah Ta'ala. No, I can't keep this. Meri milkiyat mein rakhna hi nahi. I don't have to keep it any longer. See the relationship, see the muhabbat, the respect. Allah Ta'ala bless us with that respect, that muhabbat. Even though we can't do too much, but the respect of Allah Ta'ala is the resource on anything small or big to do the deen. The yaqeen that we need to have, the conviction that Allah's word, the Nabi's word. And the greatest amount of respect that we can show, inshallah. I feel in this age someone is doing that and propagating this, that he's achieving, he's gaining and he's achieving major. Great. Allah Ta'ala.